from the verses of Noble Quran. You know, it depends on your needs and on whatever, you know, requirement that you have. If you deliver it to the verses, you benefit the most from these verses of Noble Quran.
So because, basically, Sardi Sheikh, you come to the mm-hmm. Quran, you have a problem, you're looking for an answer, and whatever answer you're looking for or you require, you will find it in the Quran.
Exactly. In one narration, we have Al-Quranu ma'adubatullah. فَتَعَلَّمُوا مَأْدُبَتَهُ مَسْتَطَعْتُمْ. Noble Quran actually is prepared food of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's kind of banquet of Allah, which foods are available. So you have to go to that and make the most from these beautiful verses of Noble Quran. Actually, we know that verses of Noble Quran has revealed for the prosperity of human being. Okay, بَصَائِرُ لِلنَّاسِ وَحُدًا وَرَحْمَةً لَعَلَّهُمْ يَتَذَكَّرُونَ. Main purpose of the verses of Noble Quran is a guidance of human being and providing prosperity both in this life and hereafter.
And because it is a guidance, and we say Islam is a timeless religion, it's exactly. universal, naturally what follows is that the Quran is also timeless and universal.
Exactly. But sometimes it has some indication to the scientific fact. I would like my dear listeners to visit, because we have many website in this regard, Quran and Science. Please check it. Many scholars, they have worked on the issue of Quran and Science. We have a lot of magazines in this regard, have done a great job in this regard. Look at the scientific fact that Noble Quran has indicated. So actually, I said that the main purpose of Noble Quran is not scientific issue, rather it's a guidance, as I mentioned, right. of human being and providing prosperity. But sometimes it has some indications to the scientific issues, and it has been proven. I do not want to go to the examples of that, but we have plenty examples of Quranic, mentioning Quranic verses about the scientific
issues. Creation of a fetus, the whole thing about the universe,
many
the solar system. You exactly. can find it readily available on the internet.
Yes, they can easily check and benefit the most from these beautiful verses.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Another point that we have is about the, you know, sublime teachings of the verses of Noble Quran. That's وَيُعَلِّمُكُمْ مَا لَمْ تَكُونُوا تَعْلَمُونَ. Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala wanted to teach us what you did not know. It means that even after maybe centuries, you cannot know that. It is not the ability of human being, within the capacity of human being, to understand many things. For example, about the beginning of creation, of course we have some theory in this regard, but it's still not proven one. But Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala talked about the beginning of the creation of human being, about the Genesis, about the day of judgment, about the purpose of life. These are very important and, of course, complicated one for the many people. About the ethical issues, we have a lot of sublime ethical issues. And you cannot believe it, my dear brother and sister, my dear audience, that how beautiful and how amazing verses we have about the sublime ethical issues and morality of the verses of Noble Quran. Nowhere else, believe it, you cannot find such issues. I wish I had time to expand on this issue.
Right.
And you know that, you know, we are living in the time of the relativism of ethics. Okay, maybe one of the most recent idea about the ethics is about the relativism of that. We are talking about, for example, some few ideas about the ethical issues, that, you know, ethics is for your individual realm of life, is only for your interaction with people.
Or as you said, it is relative. What yes. is bad and evil for you can be good for somebody else.
Please, please compare these ethical issues that we have in the day of modernity or post-modernity with sublime Quranic ethical issue. If you do some moments to have this kind of comparison, I believe that yourself you confess that the Noble Quran is a miracle, because they are incomparable. You cannot do any comparison between that, because the sublimity of the moral issues in the verse of Noble Quran, you cannot compare it with these, you know, man-made ideas about the ethical issues.
But here a question arises, dear Sheikh, because for one, the Quran is in Arabic. Two, it is in formal Arabic, which means that not everyone can just open up the holy book of the Quran and read and understand. Either you are not Arabic, or you are Arabic, and you do not have that. You do not understand everything that is said in the Quran. So, we know that there is knowledge in the Quran, but if I do not speak Arabic, I do not understand Arabic at a sufficient level, how will I then also reap the benefits of reciting the Quran?
You know that first of all, verses of Noble Quran has been revealed into Arabic language, but this Arabic is totally different from the ordinary and formal Arabic that we have. I want to say that one of the aspects of the miracle of Noble Quran is that fasaha and balagha.
How eloquent it is, exactly.
How eloquent.
We cannot describe it, but that's the problem, Sheikh.
How can I describe this issue? Yeah, but in a highest level of eloquency of the Arabic literature. Of course, it's Arabic,
right,
but very total and very unique Arabic.
Of course, but then how, again, we go back to my question, how would somebody not Arabic also reap the benefits of this?
I know.
Because the translation is not the same at all.
Because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has to describe and has to reveal his verses into a language. He has to choose one language. And one of the best languages is Arabic, actually, because it has a lot of privileges comparing to other languages of that. I want to say that even if you are, for example, English-speaking people, I don't know, Turkish-speaking, any language that you can, you have, you can easily go to the verses of Noble Quran and benefit from it. Of course, you had to have minimum understanding of Arabic literature in order to benefit from that.
So okay. We're actually telling people to study Arabic first.
Exactly, because right. you need this idea to understand the language itself.
Right.
Okay.
Because you also said you need to have a level of expertise.
Yes.
So you need to have language and also ma'rifa, knowledge, because you cannot go in blindly and just seek knowledge.
About the level of expertise for those people who want to have unique understanding of the verse of Noble Quran.
Okay.
It was different. But if you hada bayanun linnas, this is clarification for all people, for all generations.
So everybody will find an answer regardless of
everybody, how even you are, you know, the ordinary people, common people, you can benefit the most from the verse of Noble Quran from all generations. But at least you have to have minimum understanding of language.
Right.
You know, because after all, we are human being. There is no other choice. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala had to choose one language. And the best one is the Arabic language. And easily they can go and, you know, understand the verses of Noble Quran.
So, Sheikh, one of the many questions that are often asked about the Quran, because we say it is universal, everything, all kinds of knowledge comes from the Quran. Some ask, is then everything mentioned in the Quran, is all knowledge mentioned in the Quran? Because they would say like 4 times 4 is not mentioned in the Quran, and that is a form of knowledge, mathematical knowledge. But do we then say that no, everything is mentioned in the Quran, or how do we go on about answering this conception?
Let me add to, before answering your question, let me add one thing to the previous one. Actually, we have a lot of translations of the verse of the Quran provided. in any language that you imagine, you can have the translation. I know that translation is not the best choice, but at least you can have some minimum understanding of this issue.
In short, dear Sheikh, this is the aspect of the Quran that we cannot do the decipher or understand, but only an infallible source or an expert authority may. Some of the
levels of the Noble Quran, some butun, okay, layers of Noble Quran, maybe we are not, you know, capable of understanding that. But after all, all people can benefit from the appearance of the verses of Noble Quran. And of course, we have translation provided for those people.
Dear Sheikh, I would love to continue this discussion, but we are unfortunately out of time.
I thank the dear Sheikh for joining us today and sharing with us his knowledge.
My pleasure.
And I also thank you, the dear listeners, for tuning in. Until next time, fi amanillah.
Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Inna fil jannati nahran min laban. Li Aliyin wa Husayn wa Hasan. Li Aliyin وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن
يوسف جلالي بتهران
روباشافت غازا
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The battered town of Obeznoy. I came here to find out if locals are fearful of the Ukrainian army, who have made recent gains not far to the west, a local school in the center of town.
Yes, we are worried. If the Ukrainian army comes here, there will be reprisal against teachers. But our strength is in the hope that it will never happen. I have colleagues whose children happen to be on the other side. They are afraid of coming to work because they are scared for their children and themselves.
Why do you think Ukraine would kill teachers? What's the reasoning behind that?
They say that we are ideological frontline workers and we are involved in Russian propaganda. This is the main thing that teachers are blamed for, but this region is 80% Russian speakers.
Irina, who's lived in this town all her life, tells me that she has heard rumors that teachers have been killed in Kapiansk, a town recently taken by Ukraine. This shocking video was posted online, claiming to be civilians in Kapiansk. It was uploaded by Maxim Zorin, a former member of Ukraine's notorious Azov Regiment, although he later altered his post, claiming the video had been taken from a Russian soldier's phone.
Now, to my knowledge, this is the only video that has surfaced in this war so far that clearly shows civilians being executed and dumped into a mass grave. Now, this video has been completely ignored by the mainstream media of NATO countries. Why? Because the evidence suggests a strong likelihood that these are Ukrainian soldiers executing pro-Russian civilians.
A headline from Britain's Daily Mail newspaper. The article quotes an advisor to Ukraine's Interior Ministry. A hunt has been declared on collaborators, and their life is not protected by law. Our intelligence services are eliminating them, shooting them like pigs. A humanitarian center, The Ukrainian government have not only threatened teachers, but those who distribute or receive humanitarian aid with jail.
We did nothing bad. We tried to help children and elderly people. What did we do? We were giving out aid under shelling. We helped people who couldn't walk. What shall we be afraid of? We just helped. I think there's nothing bad in it.
One of the volunteers asks us for a lift to help an old woman nearby.
What do you think of the Ukrainians threatening people who take humanitarian aid?
We heard of it. We even saw a video that in Kupiansk, some guys were taken into trenches and shot in the head. We have no internet, no proof. But they say there are nationalistic battalions that do it. It shouldn't be so. We are all people, Russian, Ukrainian, Belarusian.
While thousands of pro-Russians flee Ukrainian advances in fear, those that remain in areas taken over by Ukraine risk execution due to their political leanings. Indeed, most in Donbass expect a genocide or ethnic cleansing of Russian speakers if the Ukrainians were to ever reconquer the region. Johnny Miller, Lubeznoy, Donbass.
In order to verify the names of inmates on both sides, a Saudi technical delegation arrived in Sana'a, while another from the Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a entered Riyadh in the first stage of the swap deal clinched in Amman.
Sana'a always stresses the importance of humanitarian issues, and if there is a progress on humanitarian cases, it will lead to dialogue on political and military cases as well. There could be an extension of the terms and confidence building between the two parties. Sana'a welcomes any progress on humanitarian issues, encourages this visit, and asserts that its military warnings are serious, and moving toward peace is in the interest of Saudi Arabia.
The head of Yemen's National Committee for Prisoners' Affairs says the visits have nothing to do with any political talks. However, observers say this mutual visit is the first of its kind since the beginning of the war 7 years ago. Therefore, it is an indication of direct communication between Sana'a and Riyadh.
After nearly 8 years of war, siege, and the growing Yemeni military capabilities and the resilience of Yemenis, today the world realizes that Sana'a represents the Yemeni people. This is why we see international movements and international visits to Sana'a. The visit by the Saudi delegation is not the first of its kind, but there have been unannounced visits previously, and Sana'a welcomes peace endeavors.
Meanwhile, the head of Yemen's Supreme Political Council, Mehdi al-Mashat, held talks with Assistant Secretary General for Humanitarian Affairs of the United Nations, Joyce Msuya, in Sana'a. Al-Mashat urged the world body to reject all inhumane measures taken against the Yemeni people.
Following the failure to renew the UN brokered truce and the military parades of the Sana'a government, the international community is making new moves to find a more reliable agreement that satisfies both sides and ends the sufferings of millions of Yemenis. Abdulatif Loshali, Sana'a.
The olive harvest season has begun in the Gaza Strip, and farmers are picking olives on their land in order to provide for their families. Palestinian farmers and their families leave their everyday routines in the middle of October and dedicate some of their time to pick the fruits of nearly a year of hard work and special care. The olive harvest season runs until early November. The tiny coastal territory used to have a thriving olive industry, but it has suffered a major setback due to years of Israeli blockade and wars, as well as the systematic destruction of olive trees. The state of Gaza's olive farmers reflects the scope of human rights violations committed by the Israeli regime against thousands of Palestinian farmers. Israel's tight restrictions have been preventing farmers from acquiring badly needed equipment for irrigation and planting.
The situation is very difficult, especially for olive farmers. It takes many years to grow olive trees, and the Israeli blockade has made it extremely difficult for us to get fertilizers and badly needed farming equipment.
The annual olive harvest season is considered a key economic, social, and cultural event for Palestinians. Olive and agriculture in general have been hit hard by the Israeli blockade and war since 2007. Farmers here are struggling to keep this vital sector alive. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Thank you.
There was no mention of peace talks to end the conflict in Ukraine as NATO defence ministers met in Brussels on Thursday. Spain, one of 30 NATO countries, has pledged to supply Kiev with advanced air defence systems.
This comes on top of what other allies have delivered over the last few days. I thank all allies for their significant contributions, and I urge them to continue to step up.
Ukraine's defence minister, Oleksiy Reznikov, attended the meeting in Brussels. While he's in Belgium, who's running things back in Kiev? It's a question we put to one expert during an online interview.
The Americans, because the Americans said we are offering intelligence information, we are coordinating the flow of weapons, they direct the battlefield, they have satellites under the disposal of their military.
NATO says it has doubled the number of its battle groups in eastern regions of the alliance. More than 30 warships are patrolling the Baltic Sea and North Sea. Critics say this steady build-up in recent years is designed to provoke Russia and keep NATO relevant while pumping trillions into the arms industry. NATO's Article 5 states that an attack on one member of the alliance is an attack on all of its members.
The United States is absolutely committed to its Article 5 commitments, and we are committed to defending every inch of NATO's territory, if and when it comes to that.
NATO says Russia's nuclear forces are being closely monitored. The alliance confirms it's going ahead with nuclear war deterrence exercises next week, dubbed Steadfast Noon. The drills will involve nuclear-capable aircraft, but apparently will not include any live bombs. Asked if the timing is bad given heightened tensions, NATO boss Jens Stoltenberg said it would send out the wrong signal if the exercises were suddenly cancelled now. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
The British government started the week with a big question hanging over its head: how to fund its billions of pounds worth of tax cuts announced last month. While it continues to tout the benefits of its controversial growth plan, in the real world, the central bank has had to intervene a third time to try to stabilize the financial markets less than 2 weeks after Finance Minister Kwasi Kwarteng's announcement of his mini-budget sparked market turmoil and blistering political attacks.
Will the Chancellor now put aside his pride, do the right thing for our country, end this trickle-down nonsense and reverse the budget?
The response from the finance minister, defiant, despite his recent U-turn on tax cuts for the highest earners.
She should get her facts right. The IMF today have said that our growth is going up.
What the IMF has also said is that high levels of inflation will persist longer in Britain than in almost all other advanced economies.
The answer they're going to try and give to this is to say, actually get the economy to grow. But it's very difficult to get the economy to grow if the rest of the world economy is actually shrinking at the moment. So if we're by cutting taxes, they say we'll get things going. Well, actually, at the moment, what they're trying to do is actually slow the economy down to control inflation. That's what the Bank of England's doing. But the government is moving in the opposite direction and adding inflation to it. This doesn't make sense to us.
The Chancellor hasn't made it clear where the cuts will fall. The National Health Service has the largest budget, but cutting that isn't realistic. The Prime Minister is committed to increase defense spending, which leaves other areas, such as education and welfare, looking vulnerable again.
Well, that was done before, when we had to go through a period of austerity, and that was very unpopular indeed. If they're going to go through that again, they're going to be very unpopular, and it's not going to be accepted, I don't think. So it's going to be interesting to see which bit they're going to try and cut. Or are they really just going to bank on growth, in which case we can't see how they're going to do it.
More than 24 million Britons live on some sort of benefit. A further reduction is unthinkable.
The UK economy shrank unexpectedly in August. Inflation is at nearly 10%, interest rates are up, pension funds are on the brink, faith in the government shaken. And with the Bank of England's intervention in the markets ending this week, is another U-turn by the government in the offing. Saeed Pourreza, London.
A
A general strike and civil disobedience have been observed in occupied East Al-Quds and in many areas of the occupied West Bank to reject Israel's siege on Shafat refugee camp and Anata town northeast Al-Quds. Since Saturday, the Israeli military has kept over 130,000 Palestinians in the two areas under forced lockdown after sealing all military checkpoints. The siege has disrupted residents' vital interests. It has prevented them from accessing the rest of the city for work, school, and medical care and other necessities in severe violation of their basic rights. Israeli military says the move comes as they are searching for a Palestinian gunman who killed an Israeli female soldier at a checkpoint at the entrance to Shafat on Saturday.
What goes on in these actions by the Palestinians are a normal response to the Israeli brutality and aggression against Shafat refugee camp and Anata town. The strike is meant to lift the siege imposed on Shafat and Anata, Al-Quds, Qalandia refugee camp, and other towns. We all responded to the call of civil disobedience and strike.
Also on Wednesday, the Israeli forces imposed a closure on the occupied West Bank city of Nablus, a day after an Israeli soldier was shot dead near an illegal settlement in the area. In addition to the major military checkpoints surrounding the city, dirt mounds have been placed on the Nablus area roads by military bulldozers to prevent Palestinians to use alternative exits. A manhunt is still underway to find the shooter. Israeli media revealed that the military was considering launching a large-scale operation in the northern West Bank in a bid to end the recent phenomena in struggle, armed struggle.
The resistance of the Palestinian people, and especially the armed resistance, as it happened in Jenin, and it moved to Nablus, and now from Nablus, we hope that it will be spreading all over the West Bank in order to resist this occupation. The phenomena that we are witnessing today in Nablus, this is the new way for the Palestinians to express their anger of this occupation, especially and particularly that all other political solutions is totally failed.
In recent months, the Israeli army have launched near-daily raids to the West Bank, mainly in Jenin and Nablus, where Palestinian armed resistance is becoming more organized and new groups of fighters have been formed, the most popular now known as the Lion's Den. Despite Tel Aviv's heavy-handed crackdown and collective punishment of Palestinians, they are keeping up their resistance against the regime using different tools. Every day, the Palestinians prove that the Israeli military's aggressive measures have failed to weaken their struggle. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
The EU's temporary protection directive has been specifically activated to help Ukrainian refugees. It means they are guaranteed housing, healthcare, education, and welfare payments in any of the bloc's 27 member states.
I would like today to announce that the temporary protection directive will continue to be in place at least until March 2024.
The European Commission has also launched a scheme to make it easier for millions of Ukrainians in the EU to find jobs. At the same time, thousands of refugees fleeing other conflict zones continue to sleep on the streets throughout the bloc. Also, as the cost of living crisis in the EU intensifies, activists say the bloc's own citizens are not receiving adequate support.
Nowadays, we see that people can be homeless and have a work, have a job. There's in-work homelessness, but there's also groups that are higher risk of losing their job from one day to the next.
As the war in Ukraine continues, the EU is pondering a ninth round of sanctions against Russia. Moscow's ally Belarus is also very likely to be targeted for cooperating with Russia.
All these steps, especially by the Belarusian regime, are against the will of the majority of the population and will be met with new and strong restrictive measures from the side of the European Union.
There have been renewed calls in the European Parliament for less focus on sanctions, less focus on arming Ukraine, and more focus on peace talks.
We need diplomats to finally take action. This is the view of 77% of all Germans. Political offers need to be made in order to encourage both sides to lay down their weapons.
According to many analysts, Western sanctions against Russia are clearly not working. Otherwise, a ninth package would not be on the agenda. In fact, economists say the current sanctions are hurting EU citizens far more than had been anticipated. Inflation and interest rates continue to rise with no clear end in sight. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
A new study covering a huge range of foreign policy issues found that a whopping 79% of Americans believe that the United States should continue to pursue negotiations with Iran. On almost no other key foreign policy question is there such broad support across generations and political affiliations.
Most Americans are heavily fatigued by endless wars and, you know, U.S. Foreign policy adventurism overseas, and, you know, really want political leadership, regardless of which party we're talking about, that is concerned with, you know, more pressing domestic needs.
The study's authors even declared that politicians who criticize diplomatic efforts with Iran are out of step with many of their voters. Joe Biden campaigned on a diplomatic return to the JCPOA pact on Iran's nuclear energy program. In a major backtracking, not only has he not continued to uphold the United States' end of the deal, but he has imposed round after round of new sanctions on Iran. From the Washington Beltway to Hollywood, Iranophobia, Islamophobia, and violent belligerence towards Tehran has been pushed by America's political, media, and academic elites. However, the poll seems to prove that these messages have been emphatically rejected by the average American.
The level of sway that the defense industry has over Washington, the defense lobby, and the military-industrial complex, that's who the two major parties are beholden to. There's no real significant difference between the Republicans or the Democrats. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the Iran deal. That's a perfect example.
The poll noted that for the fifth straight year, the percentage of Americans who think the U.S. should negotiate directly with adversaries has grown, now reaching 65%. Two-thirds of America supports the country's total withdrawal from Afghanistan. 40% of people declaring an opinion believe that the U.S. has not responded well to the unrest in Ukraine. The only foreign policy issue which gained as much support as diplomacy with Iran was that 80% of Americans demand more congressional oversight in the executive branch's ability to unilaterally declare wars. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Afghan Muslims marked Islamic Unity Week and the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad holding ceremonies in various cities. Here at Al-Zahra Mosque in Kabul, Muslims gathered to celebrate Islamic Brotherhood and the legacy of Prophet Muhammad. Religious scholars and participants said they are facing conspiracies and brutalities cooking inspired by arrogant powers and terrorist groups. They emphasized that Muslims can foil such plots through unity.
Uzbek, Hazara, Pashtun, and Tajik, we are all brothers and members of the Islamic Ummah. It is our responsibility to unite around Prophet Muhammad. We denounce any division between Islamic sects and countries. The Muslim world is the common land of Muslims, and we don't believe in colonial era borders. Therefore, we should help liberate Al-Quds. Al-Aqsa Mosque is the beating heart of Islam. Prophet Muhammad said that the protecting Quds is the same as protecting Mecca and Medina.
Jamee Afghanistan.
Recently, the Afghan society faced devastating plots and challenges, but we could overcome them through unity among Muslims. The enemies of Islam and arrogant powers plotted different conspiracies, including terrorist attacks, to sow sedition and pave the way for their interventions. We Muslim brothers are aware and united. Such evil plots and acts will lead to nowhere.
Likewise, the Al-Mustafa University in Kabul hosted a conference to discuss the character and morality of the Prophet of Islam. The event addressed the important role of Prophet Muhammad as a messenger of peace and kindness. Attendees here said Prophet Muhammad is their best role model ever. The Islamic Unity Week comes as Afghanistan this year faced waves of terror attacks, especially against Shia mosques and schools. Afghans say such attacks will only strengthen bonds of brotherhood between Muslims in the country. The Afghan nation has successfully symbolized Islamic solidarity in their society. They say no to discord in the face of enemies' plots. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
Climate emergency is just a rhetoric by Western regimes. This claim is evidenced by these regimes' disregard for the climate emergency and warnings against fossil fuel exploration. In a new move, the UK has opened up a new licensing round to allow oil and gas companies to explore for fossil fuels in the North Sea despite threats of a legal battle from climate campaigners. In this regard, we have taken a look at the world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. The website of Common Dreams wrote, climate campaigners have recently condemned the UK's announcement that it will open up a new licensing round for oil and gas fields in the North Sea, saying the decision signifies the Conservative government's blatant disregard for the climate emergency and warnings against fossil fuel exploration from energy experts and scientists. Claiming new oil and gas drilling will not undermine the country's stated plan to cut its carbon emissions to net zero by 2050. The North Sea Transition Authority, NSTA, said it will issue up to 100 licenses for nearly 900 exploration areas, including several that are known to contain hydrocarbons. In response to Climate Minister Graham Stewart's claim that the plan is actually good for the environment because using fossil fuels in the North Sea negates the need for foreign gas, friends of the SFOE Scotland accused the UK government of sticking two fingers up to climate scientists and energy experts. By encouraging greedy fossil fuel companies to keep looking for more fossil fuels, the UK government is denying the reality of the climate emergency, said Freya Atchison, an oil and gas campaigner for the group, adding, instead of new fossil fuels, we urgently need a transition to an energy system powered by renewables and a mass rollout of energy efficiency measures to reduce energy demand. With the cost of living skyrocketing due to the volatile prices of oil and gas, it's obvious that the UK current energy system is completely unfit for purpose, serving only to make oil company bosses and shareholders richer, while everyone else loses out, the campaigner said. The crisis in Eastern Europe has sent energy prices soaring for households across Europe. But the climate action campaign, Paid to Pollute, warned that licensing oil and gas fields in the North Sea will do nothing to alleviate the cost of living crisis. The plan is moving forward under the pretext of energy security, a campaigner for the group said in a video posted to social media. But another North Sea licensing round won't deliver UK energy security. He continued, "The North Sea is an aging and oil-heavy basin. The bald truth? The UK has burnt most of its gas. Any new gas that is found won't be produced for years and years." As the UK Committee on Climate Change said earlier this year, it takes an average of about 28 years for oil and gas production to begin from the time an exploration license is issued. UK Green Party co-leader Adrian Ramsay called the news of the latest licensing round deeply distressing. The government's claim that burning ever more fossil fuels from the North Sea will help the UK meet its international obligations to become net zero by 2050 has no connection to reality, Ramsay said on social media. The new licenses are being offered nearly a year after grassroots campaigners were credited with pressuring Shell Oil to put out of a plan to drill in the proposed Cambo oil field in the North Sea off the coast of Scotland's Shetland Islands. FOE Scotland called on Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon, who opposed the Cambo proposal, to stand up to the NSTA's reckless plans to expand fossil fuels in the North Sea. A campaigner said these announcements risk locking us into a climate-destroying energy system for decades to come. Entrenching reliance on this volatile energy in places like Aberdeen and leaving people all across Scotland exposed to rocketing energy bills.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope. Toward the peak. On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islamite. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite program, Youth Station. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Bito.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I'm really honored to be here today at your service.
How are you, Bito?
I'm doing well, thank you very much.
Yeah, life is moving.
How about you?
Yeah, it's just fine. Well, it's thank living God. And we have to go on.
Yeah, I know that.
So, what are we going to talk about today?
We have a really hot topic today that, you know, I'm really interested in that sort of things. And our topic is, young people or old people know better about life?
Oh, it's a long story.
Yeah, it's the same old long story.
Yeah. But I think nowadays we could say that even young people can know as much as old people.
You know, I'm talking about ability or something right now. The thing is, about our today topic, there is something that really bothers me, and it's generalization. You know, I hate generalization about anything. You divide, for example, people by a kind of special matter like age, like, I don't know, appearance, everything, the color or anything, it really bothers me. I don't know why.
It is, because it is bothering.
You know, it's annoying. Actually, I don't like to say that you can divide people by their age. By number, for example, I'm 18 years old, but by experience, by the, you know, level of intellect that I have, by the level of education I have, it cannot actually be determined about my age, you know what?
Yeah, I know what you mean. But you know what, Pita? We should not say that age does not matter, because it really does.
No, I'm not telling you that age doesn't matter. I'm telling you that
so
this age that we are talking about, what is it?
See, the difference between the old generation and the younger generation, that's what we're talking about.
I understand it. But, you know, there are some people that in appearance or in the number, they are younger than other people.
Yeah, but definitely.
Deep in, you know, themselves, they are really old.
Yeah,
and
of course.
When you talk to them, you understand it.
And we have plenty much of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
The old youngs, you know?
I know what you mean, but still, age has got something to say.
I know.
See, there are plenty much of people, I do believe in what you say. There are many people who are, they're 20, they feel as an old person who's 60, but they're 20. They still, they have the same knowledge, they have the same experience and the perspective about life. But also, we have older people who do not know much of things.
I know that.
You know? And it happens. And recently, I just came to think that maybe even the youngsters could help you and consult you in many things, just as the elder one.
Exactly.
You know?
Because, you know, the diversity that exists in themselves, in their lives, is so different in a way that you can just trust them. And you can ask them and you will face new answers.
Yeah.
And this is somehow interesting. And we have social life today. We have a kind of special social life with medias, with, I don't know, virtual area or something like that, that will change the way you live. You know
what?
We live faster and faster in generations.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, this will help you grow older faster. You know
exactly,
what I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
For example, in old days, you know, there weren't that much news or everything that you can be aware of the world
Nothing
around you.
Nothing was much available. You know, for
exactly.
a certain information, you had to go through too much of books and libraries and so many things, and it did take too much of time.
And another thing is that you just experience things faster and faster.
Yeah,
because you have access to many things in social media, in everything, and you are contacting more people than the old generation.
Yeah, yeah, this interaction would give you so much of
exactly.
knowledge. So what do you say about a very short break?
I do agree with that one.
Dear listeners, you're listening to Youth Station. So let's go for a short break and we'll be back in no time. Welcome back. This is IRIB English Radio. We are in here in Youth Station. We're talking about age. Is it really true that the youngsters are the same as the old people in the knowledge and in their experience and the things they can tell you? Anbita is saying that there's nothing that we could generalize, and we cannot just say that it's the youngsters who are better or the old people who are better in knowledge and experience.
Yeah.
And we do believe in that because, as you just said, Bita, media is changing many things.
But, you know, the thing is, even old generations are using this social media more and more.
Yeah.
And it is like there is a competition between the old generation and young generation too in this area that they want to know more about the world around them.
Has it ever happened to you to go for an old person for advice?
Yes, of course. You know, I don't like advices, actually. I don't know. It is above my age and I don't like to be kind of advised or something.
No, okay,
but
let's just not call it advice.
Yeah, exactly.
For consulting.
But the thing is, I had this experience. I was like, sometimes I was shocked about their knowledge. It felt
more
like,
tangible.
Exactly.
And it's more, it has got more truth.
It was
in
like,
religion.
They were just going through all the things that I will experience in my life. It was like, this is the same story that that they've experienced that, and I will experience the same thing.
Yeah. See, and of course, you have your friends in your hand, and mm-hmm. every time you come to have a problem, you go to them. Do you see any difference between going to an old person and going to a young person?
There is difference, because when I go to, for example, a young person for advice or something, mm-hmm. it's like they are like me. They are at the same level of life that I am.
Yeah.
You know, it is like that they want to help me by their imagination. Not the real things.
Of course.
When I go to young people to, you know, talk about my problems or something, it feels like somehow different. There is a different atmosphere. And I'm not going to tell you that which one is better, because both of them are useful
both
and helpful. But
advantages.
The thing is, old people are more trustful. You know, you can just trust them better.
You know, they've been there and done that.
Exactly.
So it's different to get it from a person who has already experienced it mm-hmm. and touched it with their bones and skin. So it is different.
It is. When I have a problem, mm-hmm. I usually go to both of these people.
Yeah, in order to have both perspectives.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
To see which one we have to trust more and more.
Not which one, both of them.
Uh-huh, you make a balance
between combination
of both
them
of them.
More yeah. useful.
Yeah, that's very true. And as you just said, internet has made a big change in our life. Now we have access to plenty much of information mm-hmm. and knowledge, but if you do not disagree, I would say there's a vast ocean, but it does not have much of depth. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Because we read too much of things, but we do not remember most of them.
Even it's not about remembrance. It's about the depth of the knowledge that person that wrote this article or anything that mm-hmm. has. You know,
yeah.
unfortunately, today, nowadays, everybody is a doctor. Everybody is an engineer. Everybody is everything.
Because education has been available everywhere. And as I just told you,
but
the
this
access
education,
to different things.
You know, is not systematic.
Yeah.
It's something that... It is there. It is everywhere.
Yeah,
and
it
is
there.
The thing we want.
Mm-hmm.
We want to be professional. And this profession is kind of being lost in nowadays.
Yeah. So one of the reasons for these youngsters to change into these experienced people who know many things is net. What could be another reason? Do you think there is another reason for
of
that?
Of course, there are many reasons that, you know... Even,
count them
for, example,
for me.
Yeah, I cannot count them because they are uncountable.
Like, so?
The thing is, besides internet, which is, I think, is the most important reason of these mm-hmm. changes, I think one of the other reasons is about the personality of young people and old people.
Which you is know, also under the effect of media.
Not that much. You know, I'm talking about the passion and energy that young people have.
So what's the difference between the passion I have right now and the passion I would have had 100 years ago.
Not 100 years ago, you weren't here. But the thing is, when you are passionate about something, mm-hmm. there is a desire to do
uh-huh,
new things.
So you mean there
I'm talking about
a
that desire.
And
exactly.
motivation in people
exactly.
that they want to change. And
mm-hmm. and this
more.
Desire sometimes persuades you to do something that you won't do if, for example, you were talking to an old person.
Yeah.
You know what? And this is the problem, I think. When you're talking to a young person, it's like, okay, there is passion, there is love, there are many things, there are many new things that I want to take risk and do them. And this risk, mm-hmm. unfortunately, is somehow limited by old generation.
Oh, so you're blaming the old generation
yes.
for restrictions in the borders.
I don't want to turn a blame to someone or something, but the thing is, they actually, because they had some bad experience, they're like, okay, you will experience the same thing, but mm-hmm. maybe it's not like that. I'm a different person, a different person.
They're more cautious, you know. The
yeah.
more you get older, the more you want to do things while you're on alert.
I just understand them, you know.
Because you still are 18,
mm-hmm.
that's why. When you grow older, when you start
yeah,
to turn
yeah.
into your 30, then you mm-hmm. would understand that. Sometimes what older generation have done is the same thing for you. Because as I just told you, when you grow older, you start to think in a more cautious way.
I know.
You're not going to take much of risks.
even in young generation, we have some people that, you know, they won't take risks because they're like, okay, I won't do that because I know the results. I know everything about this mm-hmm. and I won't do that. It's somehow logical, but when you're too logical to leave.
Yeah, let me just share with you, Bita, something yeah. personal, which is very much interesting and related to this story okay. of the older generation and the younger generation. I have a brother who's younger mm-hmm. than me, around 10 years he's younger than me.
Okay.
But still, when I have a problem, I go to him. And he seems to be such a great consultor. Though he's younger than me, but I feel that he has got so much of experience and knowledge to share. The perspective they have about life is actually different from the older generation. Mm-hmm. They see some angles that has not been unfolded for the other people who are perhaps a little bit older.
It was nice, you know, because yeah. most of the time, old generation is like, okay, you're too young to mm-hmm. consult us. You're too young to do that, to do this. Yeah. We don't trust you or something. And it was really nice to hear that you trust us. You trust our generation. And
like I'm an old generation right now.
You are.
I am the symbol of the old generation.
No, I'm not telling that, but you are different. You know, even 1 year can be a new generation.
Yeah, yeah, that's very true.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
We're just here talking to the youth about the youngsters who are technically in the same level of knowledge and experience with the older people. Mm-hmm. And we said that media has changed many things. We said that internet has brought such a drastic change into people's life that even a young boy or girl could be so much experienced as he or she is 60 or 70. Perhaps back in time, when you were 70, you had the same experience and knowledge that a person of a 20-year-old would have in
but
modern day.
You know what? This is somehow sad, you know, when you see someone who is in a young generation or something, but he or she is in a way of life which is really difficult for her age or his age. Mm-hmm. It was a big sorrow for me. It's like they are different, you know, they're different from the world that they have to be in that. You know what I mean? I'm telling you that, for example, I'm 18 years old, but I'm thinking like a 60-year-old woman, and what is it? It's not good that much, you know, because sometimes you are really different from the atmosphere of the other people in generation.
I know what you mean, but just as we said, the much of things that happen in the world around us, the much of catastrophes that happen mm-hmm. would make you grow faster. You know what I mean?
Yes.
The more problems you would face, the more mature you would get. Mm-hmm. That's my idea, actually. It's a personal thing.
Agree, yeah.
I'm not here to proclaim and announce a theory or whatever. I'm just saying my personal idea. I do believe that problems and things that happen around you, that you have to solve them, you have to face them, are the things that will make you grow faster. Mm-hmm. And you would be matured at an age that is perhaps earlier than mm-hmm. the desired one. So I guess it's not a bad thing. It's very much good to have that much of maturity. And
I'm not telling you it's bad. It's somehow it feels different.
But still, I think it's a good thing. Trust me, when you get older, you would understand that the experiences that you have right now and the things that you feel right now are going to come to your help at a certain age.
I trust what you're telling me because you are from old generation.
Thank you for calling me old.
You're welcome.
Okay, dear listeners, I'm no longer youth. She has made me a woman with a wrinkled face. Let's say that age does not matter. And the only thing that matters is the way you look at life, your perspective, your knowledge, experience, and maturity. Thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.